Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Enhanced CBD, bringing you the best CBD products on the market. Head over to their website and use code SUPERNECESSARY for 10% off at checkout.
It's also brought to you by Forces Fightwear, bringing you premium boxing equipment and apparel. Go to their website and use code SUPERNECESSARY10 for 10% off.
And it's also brought to you by Performance Box, high-quality sports supplements. Use code SUPERNECESSARY for 10% off your subscription.
It was super necessary.
God, Anik, my God!
Unbelievable! Just like that! Done and done! You gotta be kidding me! You gotta be kidding me!
He can't say much other than wow.
Hello and welcome back to Super Necessary. Today, I'm absolutely delighted to say that we are joined by one of the biggest names in commentary, not just combat sports commentary, but just commentary full stop. We're joined by The Voice, Mr. Michael Chiavello.
G'day, James. G'day, Kieran. Good to speak to you, boys.
Thanks very much for joining us, Michael.
Can't tell you how much we appreciate it. We've told a few of our fans about this, and everybody's just like gobsmacked that we've managed to secure yourself on it. So we're made up. We can't wait.
Thank you, fellas. I'm very excited to be here with you.
Oh, thanks very much. So we're going to start first of all. Obviously, you've got a couple of books out at the moment. You've got, obviously, Goodnight Irene and The Commentators both out at the moment. What's the reception been like to them so far? Do you seem to be going well?
Yeah, fantastic. The Commentators only came out 2 weeks ago. It's going crazy at the moment. And it's out now over your side of the world in the UK, available from Amazon in the UK and Blackwell's and WH Smith. And I'm thrilled because, you know, a lot of the book is dedicated to UK commentators. Two of the contributors to the book are two of the biggest names in the UK, Peter Drury, who you'll know if you're a soccer fan, a football fan, probably the best football commentator on the planet right now, Peter Drury. He's a contributor to the book. And also John Murray from the BBC, BBC Radio, calls all of England's games and the Euros, etc. And he's also a contributor to the book. And, you know, so many great English commentary names in there that I've loved over the years, like, guys like John Motson and Martin Tyler and John Arlott and Murray Walker, and the list just goes on and on. So I'm thrilled with the reception of the book, The Commentators, so far.
I just wanted to speak a bit about Goodnight Irene. Obviously, in there, you talk about how you've interviewed legends from all walks of life. Did you ever see that teenager, Michael Chiavello, who you see a bully, hit these kind of heights and be interviewing all these stars?
Probably, I guess the common answer for someone to say to that question would be no, but I'll say yes, because I think when I started interviewing celebrities for my local radio station when I was 16 years old, I always aimed to get the biggest celebrities, even back then when tennis players and cricket players and soccer players would come to town, I'd hunt them down and interview them. You know, when Pelé came to town, when Maradona came to town, when Monica Sellers came to town, Sabatini came to town, Richie Richardson and Wazzy Macram came to town. So even back then, I always wanted to get the biggest names. So it was never, even when I went on later to do Access TV and The Voice Versus and all the interviews I've done over the years, I've always tried to get the biggest names that I possibly could. So I'll say yes. You know, I always had that confidence and that ability within myself to be able to do that. And it was only through, you know, self-belief and having that confidence that I could do it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as you say, I think the normal question, the normal answer would be no, but if you've got that confidence and self-belief, it's always going to be, well, I knew I'd reach this point and just have to believe in myself. But I was going to ask if it's quite ironic that you went from that teenager who might not have had a voice, but then has become known as the voice. Like, is that kind of ironic in a way?
You know, that is a weird one, because I never thought, and I still don't think I have a great voice. And I got dubbed the voice. It was actually, the original nickname was The Voice Behind the Violence. It was given to me by another contributor to my book, The Commentators, a guy called Andy Raymond, fantastic Fox Sports Channel 7 commentator here in Australia. And he dubbed me that back in 1998, and it sort of just stuck. And you guys can appreciate this, being, you know, radio hosts and podcast hosts yourself, that when you're in our position and you look back at your product, so I look back at my TV commentaries over the years, and even now, you tend to cringe and you're like, oh, I don't sound good. I could sound better than that. And I'm still the same. I watch one championship back and I'm like, oh man, I wish my voice was different to that. I wish I could have said that differently. I wish I would have sounded differently. So I don't think anyone in broadcast media ever actually likes their voice. So to be dubbed the voice is kind of cool. I got to say it. I still think it's unfitting, but other people think I've got a good voice. So I'm appreciative of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you say Goodnight ID is kind of a story of just, you know, having that drive, that perseverance to succeed no matter what other people are saying?
It is. Goodnight Irene, the book, is just about self-belief. It really is. It's a story about self-belief, about a young, fat, bullied kid who people said would never amount to anything, who tried to break into one of the toughest professions in the world. To break into, because it's so niche. It's such a who you know profession, being broadcasting. And when people said that, you know, I wasn't Anglo-Saxon, didn't have the right name, didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes, and you know, I was commentating a blood sport and thought I'd never do it. And, you know, here I am commentating one championship for 154 countries, winning an Asian television award twice, being the only commentator to do that. You know, broadcast to record broadcast figures around the world, and, you know, achieving that. I think that Goodnight Irene really is a testament to that entire story of just self-belief, passion, enthusiasm, and tremendously hard work.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible, mate, that you've come this far. You know, it's amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So talking a little bit more about the commentators, you mentioned some of the names that have, I imagine, have inspired you: Peter Drury, John Motson, and names like that. There's obviously a few more I could probably think of off the top of my head, maybe like Jim Ross when it comes to pro wrestling, even some of the newer ones, maybe Mauro Ranallo, sort of names like that. Who else has inspired you over the years?
Well, those two are also in the book, and Jim Ross is a contributor to the book, which I'm really happy about as well, part of the great team that's contributing to the book. You know, over the years, Richie Beno was a great one. I think if you ask any Australian or Englishman to name their top five commentators, Richie Beno is always going to be close to the top of that list. It wasn't so much what Richie said, it was rather what he didn't say. Richie Beno was one of those guys who knew when to talk and when not to talk. And when he spoke, he had a terrific authority about him. I hate to rub it into to you Englishmen, but Richie's call of Shane Warne's ball of the century against Gadding at Old Trafford in 1993 was just superb. You know, one of my all-time favourites. I look at someone like Martin Tyler, who I mentioned before. I mean, his commentary of the EPL, especially the famous Aguero commentary for Man City, you know, several years ago, I think it was 2012, was legendary. I look at a guy like, you know, Murray Walker in Formula One. I look at someone like Bill Collins in horse racing, or Peter O'Sullivan horse racing. The great John Arlott, of course, calling cricket. Even in darts, you know, looking at Sid Waddell in darts, what he did for darts was extraordinary. So many great commentators from so many different sports that have really, over the years, provided us with the soundtrack of our lives. And so many, what I call in the book, boys, are starburst memories, light bulb memories. We all remember where we were at particular times watching a sports event, just like we remember where we were when we heard that Princess Diana had died, or where our parents remember where they were when they heard JFK had been assassinated. You know, when I remember where I was watching Roberto Baggio score against Czechoslovakia, that wonder goal in the 1990 World Cup, and hearing the great English commentator Alan Parry call that one. And it's just one of those memories that's stuck in my mind. So the commentators is an entire book about these sorts of sports memories and the commentaries that made them so great.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds incredible. I'm glad it's available for us over in the UK as well, because it sounds like an absolutely brilliant read. So I'm going to be getting that as soon as.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously you've commentated for a number of different organisations throughout your career. Do you feel you've now got your home at One Championship?
Oh, I love being at One Championship. I really do. I always felt my spiritual home of commentary was in Asia. Asia is where I made my name with K1, with Dream, of course, Sengoku, Dynamite. So I always felt this was my spiritual home. To be back commentating in Asia is a huge buzz, and I love it everywhere we go. And One Championship is a great team to work with. It's a big team. You guys don't realize how big it is, how many people are involved in one show. Hundreds of people are all cogs in a very big wheel. And that wheel is greased so well and works so well because all these individual cogs are so dedicated to doing their jobs to the best of their abilities. And One Championship is just a big giant wheel that keeps turning and keeps growing every single day, thanks to the tireless work of people behind the scenes. And, you know, we continue to sign the best martial artists on the planet. We continue to do the biggest and best shows. And you look at the talent coming up over the next few months and the shows we've already got organized, and it's just phenomenal. And it's excited. How can I not go to work every week for One Championship and not be tremendously excited at seeing this talent and these shows we're piecing together? These are fantasy shows come to life.
Absolutely. It's one's definitely going from strength to strength. Especially, you know, especially for us, maybe in the UK, probably hasn't been as accessible to us in the UK as it has been the last 12 months. So for us to now get to appreciate it is just, it's amazing to see.
And of course, you know, when the COVID pandemic closes and we can travel again, it's the only reason why you haven't seen too many of the UK fighters on our shows recently. But, you know, the best ones are there. We've got Jonathan Haggerty. We've got Liam Harrison, Liam Nolan. We've got Imam Barlow. You haven't even seen Imam Barlow on one yet she's signed to us for one super series. So all these great UK fighters are signed to one but haven't been able to travel because of the pandemic. So when that eases up and they're able to travel again, you're going to see the huge UK contingent come, and I reckon they're going to start dominating, particularly in, you know, one super series. Haggerty, Nolan, Harrison, Barlow, they're exceptional talents.
Yeah, yeah, add more talent onto an already stacked roster. So we had your broadcast colleague Mitch Chilton on a little while back. We asked him at the time what his a few of his dream signings would be for One, and one name he mentioned was Gordon Ryan. A few days later, Gordon was signed to One. How excited are you to see Gordon in the circle?
You know, guys, I think anytime you see the world's best in any sport, you get excited. How excited would the PSG fans be at the moment that they signed, you know, Donnarumma and they signed Lionel Messi? You know, you got the best goalkeeper and arguably the best player in the world signed to PSG. So it's the same here at One. When we sign people like Gordon Ryan, we're signing the best in the world. We're signing the Lionel Messi of BJJ. So I'm super excited that I get the chance to commentate him. I get the chance to have that on my resume, but more so, I get the chance to put my stamp of verbal excitement on Gordon Ryan's career, and that we get a chance to showcase someone like the King to a worldwide audience the way that no one else does.
Yeah. And to go back to that question, Manob, do you have any dream signs for One Championship?
Man, you know, it's I do. I do. It's difficult to say because they're all signed currently elsewhere, but I'd love to see Rico Verhoeven come over to one Super Series. I'd love to see Alistair Overeem, who signed for Glory, of course. I would have loved to see the Ream over in one Super Series. Yeah. There's guys in the UFC that I'd love to see come over just because I want to see how they go. I want to see how a John Jones does. I'd love to see how Khabib does. You know, I'd love to see how a Diaz brother does, you know, how a Masvidal does. Any of these guys, I'd love to see come over. The women, you know, let the women come over and challenge our Angela Lees. Let them challenge our Zhong Jinans. It's not so much the dream individual signings. It's more so the dream that I want to see how guys from other major organizations stack up against our guys and girls. And so far from what we've seen of UFC people coming to one championship, it's been a very rough ride. Eddie Alvarez, Yushin Okami, you know, they've had very rough times. Sexy Yama, all these guys that have come from UFC have had a tough going. And I'd like to see more of it happen. Maybe we can do an inter-promotion one day. I doubt it'll ever happen. I wish it would. That would be the biggest dream fantasy, I think, for all fans worldwide. Let's do it. And it's not as if one hasn't tried to make it happen. I think Chatri Sijitong said he's happy to put together a team, happy to send them over to fight the UFC guys, happy for UFC to, you know, take the gate, do the show. Let's just see how it goes, one versus UFC. So for me, and I think for millions of people worldwide, that would be the dream.
Absolutely. Yeah, do you think there's a little bit? Do you think there's a little bit of a sort of misconception that because one isn't as big as the UFC in the US, that for some reason the level of fighter wouldn't be as good in one?
Almost definitely. That's the perception I would say in the US. But for those familiar with ONE Championship, and you're talking a massive market in Asia, I know we're on terrestrial television, not pay-per-view. We're on terrestrial TV in all these countries like the Philippines, Myanmar, China, Indonesia, Singapore, all over the place. I mean, they're familiar with the product. I mean, that's where our ratings boom, and they would put their money on ONE Championship beating UFC if the matches go down. It's the two hemispheres of the world, the West and East. It's completely different thinking. And it's only because our exposure is not so big in the West as it is in the East. And that's all it comes down to, really. And there's only one way to settle it, and that's to let them fight each other.
Absolutely.
I think everyone would love to see that, you know, a big mega event of one organisation fighting the other, you know, who's the most dominant. I think that would be incredible. And in the fighting world, I think it would be incredible to see.
Absolutely. And like you say, I think to anybody who's familiar with ONE, that would be definitely the two most elite promotions on the planet going head to head. So I think it would be extremely exciting if it ever did go ahead. So fingers crossed. Something else we asked Mitch when he was on the podcast is what you were like behind the scenes off the camera. So just to switch that up a little bit, what's Mitch like behind the scenes?
What's Mitch Chilson like behind the scenes?
Yeah.
Great guy, man. Mitch is awesome. I'll tell you about Mitch. He's the best smelling commentator I've ever worked with. Mitch is all about hand sanitizers, hand lotions, skin creams, wipes and everything. He smells delicious. So it's nice to sit next to Mitch Chilson every time I commentate. That's one thing. You know, Mitch is an anomaly in the broadcasting world. I'll tell you why, because often when you're a commentator, you've got to start from the bottom and work your way up. Dragon didn't do that. Dragon was thrown into the ONE Championship commentary without any previous commentary experience. He started at the very top, and a real baptism of fire, and he could have crashed and burned, but he has handled the pressure, handled the big challenges thrown at him, and come through like an absolute champion. And I believe he's a fantastic analyst. And, you know, he's found his own methods of warming up before a show. And he does a lot of research, very research-oriented as well. Does a lot of the vocal exercises before a show. He'll walk around the arena, and it's quiet in the arena, and you can hear Mitch doing his vocal exercises like he's singing to himself, warming up his throat. I don't do it. Some people do. Mitch goes through the octaves like, you know, like Miley Cyrus when he's rehearsing for a commentary. It's impressive. But he's always, this is the other thing about Mitch behind the scenes. He's always got a portable kettle he brings with him to a show, and he plugs it in near the commentary position, and he pours makes himself hot tea and hot honey water during the show while he's commentating. He's got his strange habits, but they all seem to work for him, and I love commentating by the side of a dragon.
Is that... Does he drink tea to keep his vocal cords all light so, you know, he doesn't become sort of... His voice doesn't go away?
He does, and his... Yeah, you know, your tea, not with lemon though, because lemon's too acidic, but tea with honey, hot water with honey is a great way to lubricate your throat when you're talking, when you're doing singing, when you're doing commentary, anything. And Mitch is lucky because he can drink it a lot during the show. I can't, because during an ad break, we've only got a minute and a half, and the toilets are a little far away. And this, you know, this may sound funny, but a broadcaster's genuine concern is a toilet break, believe it or not, because you hold on to it until there's a break. Now, Mitch can run to the toilets during a commercial break. I can't have that luxury because when we return from break, I've got to bring us back into the live broadcast. So I've got to hold on to it till the end of the show. So Mitch can happily guzzle all the tea he wants and go for a toilet break, but I can't do that. So no hot tea for me during the show.
That'd be me, that, to be fair. I'd be the exact same. So I'd be holding it all in.
So, of course, you're well known and loved for your epic one-liners. I mean, on our introduction, we've got your "That Was Vicious and Delicious" one, which we love. One question we did get asked when we put this out that we were going to have you on is, do you come up with them before the events, or are they just in the moment sort of one-liners?
You know, this is interesting, guys, because it's another thing that I talk about in the book, The Commentators, scripted versus spontaneous commentary. Throughout history of commentary, a lot of the most famous calls you've ever heard have actually been scripted beforehand. It's not that you know when things will happen that you can script them. You do these what are called headline comments. So you pre-prepare a comment knowing that if a certain thing takes place, a certain result, a certain score, a certain goal score, or a certain knockout, you can then use that pre-scripted comment that will be used on replays, used on news broadcasts, used on highlights for years to come. A lot of famous commentators do it. One of the ones that is famous, let's see, maybe Kenneth Wollstonecraft, 1966. They think it's all over. It is now, when England won the World Cup. You know, there was one from George Lilelien, the Norwegian commentator, when Norway beat England, the very famous Maggie Thatcher, "Can you hear me?" commentary that all English people will know very well. That, no doubt, was pre-scripted at halftime. There was no way he could have done that on the fly. So while most of our commentary, most of mine is, of course, spontaneous, sometimes I will jot down, if it comes to me, a comment, a one-liner, a nice headline comment that I can use in the event that someone wins. One that I had last show, Ritu Folgart. I was watching Donnie Brasco a couple of weeks before, and of course he says, "Oh, forget about it." And I go, "Oh, forget about it, Folgart about it, Ritu Folgart's fighting." I wrote it down. Maybe if she wins, I'll say, "Forget about it," and she won, and it worked. You know, when Ong Lan Sung beat Brandon Vera in Tokyo, I had scripted a couple of lines for both of them should they win. A few lines. I had a scripted line if Ong Lan won by decision, a scripted line if Ong Lan won by knockout, and a scripted line, the same two scripted lines for Brandon. And when Ong Lan beat Brandon by TKO, and I said, "Do you believe in aliens?" because Ong Lan is out of this world, it was scripted. So, you know, though most of it is spontaneous, most of the one-liners are spontaneous. Yeah, sometimes it is scripted.
I mean, it seems like it takes quite a bit of creativity to call it with those as well. It's like what you've just said there, forget about it, changing that to forgot about it. It's like it takes a little bit of creativity, you know, for those things to stick as well.
You've got to have fun with it. That's the thing. And the creativity is part of the joy of doing the preparation before a show. I'm already in the process of, you know, next week's research for next week's show, or this week's show, actually, yeah. This week's show coming up. Next week's show. Yeah, I'm in quarantine here in Singapore, so the dates are getting away from me. Next week's show. And I'm already in pre-prep for that and getting all my notes. And as I go through the card, I'm thinking, well, what would be a good headline comment for Christian Lee or for Capitan or for Okrayun should they win? That'll you know, be able to be used on highlights packages for years to come. Because as a broadcaster, it's important to think in sound bites and in packages for future reference.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's where obviously the talent of commentators comes into it, because someone like myself, my mind wouldn't even go there. I'd hear that and completely forget that I ever even heard the line, and just it wouldn't come to my mind. But that's obviously where it comes into it. You've been doing it for, you know, for years, for majority of your adult, well, for all your adult life. So
it comes down to, like any profession, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And, you know, still I have scripted lines put down that I forget to use. I forget we're there. On the last show on Empower, I had another two or three that I had one about Zhong Jinan, I had one about Hirata, I had a great one about Stan Fairtex, and I forgot to use them. You know, I literally forgot to use them. But it's just a matter of practice and doing it for so long. There's that old story that goes, a person needed some plumbing done at their house one day, water pipe blew or something, so they called a plumber over, and the plumber finished the job in like 2 minutes and charged the person $1,000. And the person's like, $1,000, you only worked for 2 minutes. And the plumber said to them, well, it wasn't the 2 minutes of work I'm charging you for. It was the 30 years of getting it to this point that I could do it in 1 or 2 minutes for you. You know, it's the same with commentary. I've been doing this for 30 years, so I make it look and sound easy. And it's not easy. It's just a lot of practice and a lot of work has gotten me to here that I can make it sound that way. I'm like that plumber. You know, you're paying me not because I make it sound easy, but you're paying me for the 30 years experience and working the fingers to the bone to get here and hopefully entertain and educate and inform people.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you do. You entertain and educate people and inform everyone, you know, definitely.
Absolutely. So stepping away from one for just a moment, what's your favourite fight that you've ever called?
Great question. There was a ripper back in 2007, and you'll find it on YouTube in K1 Max between Masato and Buakaw at the Budokan. The Budokan is a tremendous arena. You get like 15,000 in there. It's where the Beatles played in Tokyo. It's where Ali fought Inoki in Tokyo. And commentating there was a buzz. And that match between Masato and Buakaw, who at the time were the two biggest kickboxing names in the world, was just electrifying. I commentated it with Ray Seppo and the late Mike Bernardo. And I think that's a fight that stands out, that one. And also Chahid versus Mike Zambides, which is arguably the most watched kickboxing fight of all time. It's got so many millions of views on YouTube, and it always just pops up and goes viral. It was fun doing that one in Korea. And anyone who's seen it knows how good it is. And if you haven't seen it, go on YouTube after listening to this, find Zambides versus Chahid and sit back for 12 minutes and just, you know, enjoy it. That's nuts.
Enjoy the violence.
Yeah, a lot of it.
So come back to One Championship then. So in your opinion, what has been One Championship most significant moments in its history so far?
I think when we did One Century, it was a big leap for One Championship. We were on TNT. We were in Tokyo for the first time. It was our 100th show. We put a lot on the line for it, and it worked. You know, it worked for us. It was a huge show. It was a ratings winner, 81 million viewers worldwide. We peaked on, you know, Nielsen rated on TV, which was our biggest viewership ever, I believe, on TV. I think there was a major moment where One Championship really signaled to the watching world, we are here. We'd signed Demetrius Johnson, we'd signed Eddie Alvarez, they were both competing on the same show, you know, at a new era as well, the other one we did in Tokyo. Those two shows really signaled to the world, you know, here we are. We're here, we're happening, and we are not trying to be the UFC. That's never been what One Championship's been about. We're trying to be us, and we are trying to beat those that rate higher than us. Mm. And those that rate higher than us are, you know, like NFL, NBA, WWE. We want to be a better product on TV than those. You know, we want to get better ratings than the NFL gets worldwide. That's our aim. And I think us doing those two shows in Tokyo was really the planting our flag on the mountain and saying, yep, here we are.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. So it's not just being the biggest organization in MMA or the fighting world. It's across every sort of sport and thing that you can think of.
Yeah, and I think that's got to be the aspiration if you're not aiming to reach the top of just the sporting world, not just the MMA world, then, you know, why do it in the first place? Yeah. So I love that ambition. I love that drive that the company's got.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame that every martial arts organization comes out and says they're going to go head-to-head with the UFC and try and beat the UFC. I mean, why do that? I mean, focus on your own growth. You don't see, you know, Premier League execs come out and go, we're going to be bigger than the La Liga, you know, or bigger than the Serie A. It doesn't happen. You know, you just don't do that. You concentrate on being the biggest you can be. So you see the EPL is now one of the top five most watched sports organizations on the planet because they're trying to get the number one from whether it be WWE or whether it be the NFL. They want to be number one, or the IPL, whoever it might be. So that should be your aim, you know, to get the biggest market share of viewership on the planet, not for, as you guys said, not for your sport specifically, but for sports overall. Mm. And try to ingrain yourself in the mainstream sporting mind.
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the hot topics in MMA right now is the use of oblique kicks and if they should be banned or not. What's your view on oblique kicks?
I don't mind them. They've been used for years. It's just that, you know, people talking about oblique kicks now like they're a new thing. But, man, I've been commentating oblique kicks for almost over 20 years. Kickboxing, Muay Thai, been using them for a long time. Legitimate martial arts technique. I've got no problem with it whatsoever. I don't like techniques that aren't legitimately taught in martial arts schools. I never liked soccer kicks for that reason. The name itself, soccer kick.
Yeah.
Right? Soccer. There's no name for that kick in any martial arts school. Go to a dojo, a karate dojo, you know, go to a kung fu school or, you know, go to a taekwondo school. You won't find in any of their syllabus, you won't find a soccer kick. I don't like them, you know. Headbutts. Oh, all right, you find them in a couple of martial arts, Letway. You find it in Krav Maga, but you find everything in Krav Maga. But that's a street fighting technique, a dirty street fighting technique, a headbutt. It doesn't belong in professional sport, I don't think. Oblique kicks, I see nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I think we both agree there with oblique kicks. I mean, if, like you said, if it's done in a MMA setting in a dojo, then why not? You know, as you say, soft kicks and headbutts, they're not, you know, trained in a dojo, so that's a very interesting way that people should look at it, I think.
Yeah, I agree more.
So we've spoke about this in the past as well. I think we might have spoke about it with Mitch. I think Peter Baust might have spoke about it with him. But do you believe one's approach to weight cutting should be adopted by other organisations?
Well, it's worked for one. And we are getting fights where the athletes aren't tiring as much, where they're happy, they're hydrated, they've eaten. Compare the vision you see in other organizations where you're having trainers having to hold their fighters up just to stand on a scale. You're having fighters collapse. Fighters rush to emergency rooms because they're so dehydrated. It's not healthy.
No.
It's just... and. You know, you're getting guys and girls who are dieting, cutting weight to extreme measures. And once they've weighed in, they go and binge eat, pack on the weight, and they come into the cage, you know, the next night for the event, and they're kilos over their opponent. They're getting an unfair advantage because they know how to work the weight cutting system. So I think that, you know, not only is our system safer for the fighters, but it's also fairer when the match rolls around rather than, you know, I've known guys in kickboxing and Muay Thai in the past who could strip down to 70 kilos, you know, for a super welterweight fight at the weigh-in and look like death, and then come in 24 hours later and be 80 kilos, put on 10 kilos overnight. I'm not lying. I won't name names, but I'm not lying. And, you know, then they legitimately have, you know, their opponent maybe gets to 71, maybe 72, but these are bigger guys who are naturally 80 kilos, who are then able to put it on overnight. They've got an 8-kilo advantage over their opponent. It's not fair. So in fairness and in being healthy, I think our system is better.
Yeah, and I think it also increases performance of the athletes as well, which in turn puts on better fights, which in turn...
You know, guys, having been on the fight game for so long, you know, so long, almost 30 years, the one, athletes are just happier.
Mm.
You know, to talk to them the day of a fight, the day before a fight, 2 days before a fight, you know, we always interview the fighters before an event, and other times, you know, other organizations I've worked for in the past, particularly in the US, you know, I spent 7 years over there commentating over there. The guys look so drained and they can't offer you much at all because they're just gaunt and drained and tired, and all they're thinking about is drinking and eating. Here at One, it's not that problem. The guys are in high spirits, you know, and it's nice to see because it allows them to concentrate on their strategies on the fight rather than just strictly filling their minds with when am I going to eat? When am I going to drink?
Yeah.
That's going to be torture.
Absolutely. No, I think we're both big fans of One's approach to it, and we both think it should be more adopted throughout the world, but it's just whether it ends up working for that particular promotion, I suppose. So finally, to finish off, Michael, where do you see One Championship in the next 5 years?
Continuing to kick bowls and much bigger than we are now. You know, it's all about viewership. It's all about getting eyes on the product. And it's all about, you know, creating inspirational role models that everyone can look up to and doing it through the platform of martial arts. I think our TV ratings will continue to boom. I think we'll sign a lot of new TV deals with the increase in digital views. I mean, we're one of the top four most digitally viewed organizations on the planet right now. Billions of digital views every year on our online videos. And we're so interactive with our fans online, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, etc. That's going to just grow, man, I don't know how many fold. But also, you know, creating those athletes that can inspire especially young people. And when you've got people like, you know, Christian Lee, Victoria Lee, who are inspiring so many youngsters, Joshua Pascio, you know, young world champions like that, who are just so inspiring. A lot of these guys that are coming from poor, impoverished backgrounds or backgrounds that have known tremendous adversity, for them to rise to the top and be broadcast around the world to millions and have gold around their waist and have the gold streamers falling from the ceiling, I mean, that's got to be just an inspiration to a young kid who is growing up on the wrong side of the tracks or growing up in adverse conditions in some of the, you know, the very poor cities that we're broadcast to in some of these nations that aren't, you know, as fortunate nations as we live in. It's got to be an amazing thing for them to go, well, if that person could get out of poverty, if that person could overcome a rough upbringing where their parents died or, you know, they had to live in a jungle with their grandmother or their auntie and fend in the wild almost. It's true. That's, you know, that's the type of stories we'll want to keep creating and giving hope and inspiration to people. And I think that's the main, you know, that's where the main thing lies for One Championship over the next few years is those real life superheroes.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, we can't wait to see how much One continues to grow. We know it's only going to get bigger in the Western part of the world. And we're super excited to see it. Michael, thank you so much for your time. Honestly, it's been absolutely brilliant. Looking forward to the show next week. We can't wait to see it. And hopefully it's going to be as good as the last few shows have been, because they've been off the charts. So best of luck to you and to One. And again, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Kieran. Been great, guys. Thanks for all the support, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, mate.
Take it easy.
This is the greatest. I love it.
It was super necessary.
vicious and delicious.